Blog Talk Radio.
And good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this special edition of the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show as we discuss the ending of the presidential election for the new U.S. soccer president, which is Carlos Cordero. A long morning over in Orlando at the Renaissance Convention Center. Joining me from World Soccer Talk is Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, at the end of the day, after three rounds of voting, we have a brand new president. I would say some are happy, some are not. They're not happy about this pick. Well, in your mind, was this the correct pick for U.S. for the General Assembly to vote to bring this man as the new president to take over for Sunil Gulati?
I guess I'm going to be a typical kind of journalist reporter here and say it depends on your perspective, Daniel. But today's been long, but trust me, yesterday was such a long day at the Renaissance The geography of this hotel is it's really isolated from other things. So basically everything that was happening on campus, so to speak. It's not like past AGMs or the U.S. The United Soccer Coaches Convention, the old NSCAA, that would take place at the convention center or place where you could easily walk to a restaurant and do deals and do things outside of kind of plain sight. It wasn't like that here. It was a very isolated venue for things. So I think, you ended up, I mean, my instinct trying to listen and be a reporter and tweet out some important bits for people out there. And I hope I was informative and educational to folks that were following me on Twitter the last 3 days while I've been on the ground. It was easier to pick things up because of this. So, because everybody was kind of cooped up in the same place. I think what we clearly saw in this race, Daniel, was there is a sense that there needs to be change. There needs to be a different process of governance, a different style of governance from Sunil Gulati. People at the youth and adult soccer level don't want to be run roughshod over by Major League Soccer and by the professional game in general. But they just weren't ready for the type of wholesale, rip the system up type changes that some candidates were offering. So, it's possible that a lot of delegates saw the extensive plans, progress plan, as it was called, by Kyle Martino, who was obviously an insurgent reform candidate, and thought, this is a bit much. This really kind of undermines our ability as leaders to stay as leaders. So in a lot of cases, people vote their own personal self-interest, even if it's not in the interest of the greater groups they're representing. And that is, I think, a topic that will come up over and over again, because Kyle Martino in his speech today, in his remarks, was very direct to the delegates about the issue of a dues or fees rollback for adult and youth soccer, an issue that that Martino felt strongly about in me, and at least in theory, would give him access to a great number of the delegates. Now, I will say this, though. Carlos Cordero had abstained from voting as a board member on that proposal, which you could interpret as being very political, but in a public fashion, by abstaining, he did not vote with Sunil Gulati and Don Garber on it, which probably was enough. It's funny because you have all these different conversations with people in the hotel. Yesterday afternoon, okay, so that board vote took place yesterday morning. Yesterday afternoon, there began to be speculation Carter was going to be up around 45% on the first ballot because the support Cordero had among adult and youth soccer leaders might collapse because he had not stood up and opposed and fought for them on that matter. But by abstaining and not siding with Sunil and Garber, and by extension the Kathy Carter, the people backing Kathy Carter, even though he wasn't fighting the fight like Kyle Martino, Kyle Martino's not on the board, so he doesn't have to vote on it, right? He actually, I think, proved his independence to them to a point where those that were hanging on the fence and thought, okay, we're probably more comfortable with Cordero, but maybe we'll look at Martino or Steve Gans or Eric Winalda or whoever, thought, okay, he's very publicly defied Sunil. Now, a lot of us had interpreted differently, saying, well, we thought Cordero had the ears and the pulse of youth soccer and adult soccer, and he didn't stand up for them. Well, it was interpreted differently. So his abstention yesterday morning probably won him the election. Not voting with Sunil. I mean, if he voted no, he probably would have won the election anyway, and then he would have disarmed Kyle Martino from giving that speech this morning, which preceded Cordero, right, by a couple speakers. But ultimately, he won the election because he showed a certain degree of independence when the rest of the board didn't, quite honestly, with three exceptions, which were the direct reps from adult and youth soccer. So when you consider that, he was the only board member not directly tied to adult and youth soccer to defy Sunil Gulati yesterday.
Yeah. Well, that's the situation that that comes up all the time, obviously, with Sunil. And, you know, once again, this was on Sunil's watch, why this happened. I truly don't believe we would have had this type of election happening if the U.S. did qualify for the World Cup. I think seeing what has happened in Trinidad has sparked tons of debate, tons of discussion, tons of, you know, as typical it is on social media, bomb throwing, no matter who it is or what's going on, you know. But we needed to have some form of, I guess, common sense we needed in this one. And hopefully it did come to fruition. We'll see what happens. You know, as we talk about those that were on the dais speaking, obviously some made some valid points. And some I felt didn't make some good decisions or finger pointing. But once again, you know, this is not, you know, presidency of the United States, it's presidency for U.S. Soccer Federation. But once again, you know, I just felt that, you know, some of the speeches were made. I thought Eric Winalda tried his best to make it more common sense than others did, because that's the one thing I think is missing out of this whole thing. We got to start fighting together and not against each other. And I understand why he says this, because the more infighting we're going to have, the worse we're going to be. And I think that's the number one thing that we needed here. Someone to stand up and say, okay, I'm going to take the charge and I'm going to pick up the flag and I'm going to lead us into the future. And I'm going to make sure we all come together. Whether Cordero is the correct candidate or not, we got to give him an opportunity to see if he is that correct person. If not, then we're going to be back at this another 4 years.
Well, he's only going to serve one term anyway. So we will be back at this in 4 years. The question is, will we keep going in the direction with the tone Carlos Cordero set? Will we adjust our course and go in the direction that those like Martino and Solo and Winalda were talking about? Or are we going to course correct in another direction and go back to the Sunil-Kathy Carter direction? I think what happened is Cordero became – and it's tough to say – it's tough to think this, because he is every bit of the establishment when you're looking at it from the outside. I felt that. Look, and I have to – I'll just do a mea culpa here. Part of my perspective was shaped by – having worked for the NASL for 3.5 years and having felt that Sunil Garber, I almost called him, wow, Freudian slip. Sunil Gulati and Don Garber were open and fair to the NASL. And Carlos Cordero and, in my opinion, Dan Flynn weren't when we started to leave and were fighting us. But as this race went on and Cordero was running in his own right to replace Galati, I remarked to a prominent journalist who's not here in Florida this weekend, but the prominent American soccer journalist that everybody knows, a couple of weeks ago, I said, yeah, the thing we're talking about Cordero is he actually listens. He actually weighs different sides of the issues. Okay, imagine that. You know, he's not just doing what he feels is best for MLS, like Sunil Gulati did in many cases. Sunil Gulati acted as if he was an MLS employee throughout much of his tenure, starting at the very beginning in 2006, before all these lightning rod things happened in the last 2 years. And not like Eric Winalda or Kyle Martino, who many felt, now whether this is fair or not, talked down to them as former players and basically said, well, we know the system better than anyone. This is how it should be. Now, I never got that tone personally from Martino or Winalda. Then again, I know both guys. I consider them both friends, so maybe it's because I'm on a different level with them. But that's the way some delegates reflected it to me. They said, oh, you know, Cordero, he listens. And I was picking up on this weeks ago. So actually had a couple conversations with journalists. And said, I really kind of reassessed Cordero. He may not be my cup of tea because I tend to be more of a reform-minded person. My belief system about where the game should go in this country lines up pretty squarely with the document that Kyle Martino produced, his progress plan. You know, that's where I am. But a lot of people like Cordero. So I even tweeted 2 weeks ago, I think Carlos Cordero is the front runner. But blah, 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 blah. And I got so much abuse on Twitter. They're like, what do you mean he's a front runner? He's not even in the conversation. Because too many people were basing things on what was going on Twitter. What ended up happening was Cordero had consolidated a lot of that support. And how he'll govern, there's a lot of mystery about this, right? But I believe he's going to govern in a way that's pretty pretty equitable to both sides. And we can get into specifics in a minute. I'm sure you want to ask questions about specifically what he'll do about certain things. We don't know for certain, but I have a pretty good read, having covered this race for the last 4 months and really been down in the trenches talking to people the last 4 or 5 weeks and obviously on the ground in Orlando the last few days.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the one thing we really need to know what Cordero's going to do here, because if we have no idea about his plans on how he's going to, find a way to fix whatever needs to be broken, you know, then we'll never get this whole thing situated and we'll never have this game fixed. Now, you know, I have to say I wasn't surprised about Winograd, even though he lasted after the first round to go into the second round of voting. I personally didn't think he was going to be at least in the top three. Paul Caligiuri, while, you know, their intentions were great, obviously, no doubt about that, but I didn't think Paul was going to make it because I didn't think he had enough votes from the start that he was going to at least be in the top three. And, you know, here's the interesting thing, though, that I think is kind of telling in this voting situation was that even though Cordero and Kathy Carter were top two, the rest were below them. So you have to say, in all honesty, Kardec, that, while Carter remained in second throughout three rounds of voting, you know, she didn't really crack that first position that, you know, I thought she might have.
On the third round of voting, she actually ended up tied with Kyle Martino for second. I think they had the same number of votes, or there may have been a one vote difference.
Yeah, they did. No, they did. They did.
Yeah.
But the percentage, though, was higher for Cordero than it was for Carter, though. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, the whole time. Yeah, right. Now, what I had thought would happen last night, as it became obvious to me that Kyle and Eric couldn't work out their differences, and their differences were, I don't know, I guess I'm going to say this here and hopefully don't get the two guys mad at me. Their differences were largely personality-based, weren't based on any real substance because they were occupying the same space. Now, the fact that they were occupying the same space, I think, created personal problems because both felt they were the stronger candidate to hold up the reform mantle. Both are former national team players. Both have prominent television gigs. Both are pretty well connected in the game. I would say Martino's better connected in the game internationally, but Ronaldo has done more in terms of adult soccer and youth soccer and coaching. So there was a clash of egos when these two guys are very similar in their backgrounds, very similar in their in the space they occupy. So when it was obvious they weren't going to get together, it was growing increasingly obvious. Look, I mean, I tweeted on Monday that they were close to a deal, or I don't know how I phrased it, but something along those lines. And immediately, I was feeling like I needed to backpedal on it because I talked to both of those guys, and that's the kind of insight I had that a lot of other reporters don't, was that those two guys, I have worked with Eric before, and I like them, and Kyle, I've gotten to know a lot the last few years since World Soccer Talk became more focused on covering the Premier League and covering television, really, and NBC. But I realized that there was they wanted to get together, but they wanted to get together, both of them under their own terms. So it didn't happen, and the other four candidates, we can get into Gans and Vinograd in a minute, because I do want to talk about those two guys specifically. It became obvious it was a Carter versus Cordero race, which is what I thought it was 2 weeks ago, right? And then I began to think, okay, either Kyle or Eric is going to get their stuff together, and one of them is going to emerge as a credible change agent. It didn't happen. But 2 weeks ago, I would have said, I think Cordero leads and Carter is coming from behind, and MLS is trying to twist arms and bully people, that sort of thing. Instead, what ended up happening, that could have been the scenario, right? Instead, by yesterday, the general consensus was, okay, Carter will be in the high 30s and low 40s. Ronaldo and Martino will both have a higher percentage of the vote than they ended up having. And Cordero will have to cobble together a coalition, reaching out to Ronaldo and Martino supporters to get himself across the line. Now, that sort of happened because he still was only at 36% on the first ballot, but that he led the first ballot, as you mentioned, Daniel, is really significant because, as I said, my thinking last night was, okay, I can't say, I'm going to say this thing leans towards Carter, but I think it's between those two, but Cordero's going to be behind, and he's going to need to convince the supporters of Eric and Kyle that he can win. Now, he still had to do that, but he was ahead, critically, on the first ballot. And once I saw the results for the first, once they put him up on the board, I'm looking at it, I said, you know what, he's got this. I don't know if it's going to take two ballots, three ballots, six ballots. He's not falling behind the rest of the day. And as we saw, by the third ballot, everyone else supported collapsed.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree with you. I really do, because I think Cordero got, you know, once the first round came up, I just said to myself, I think he's going to get it too, and showed it. And all I can say is that, you know, this is what happened, and I'm not saying we have to accept it.
One other thing.
But
Daniel, sorry, I want to mention this. I think
go.
There was a feeling that Cordero, that the majority of the delegates here in Orlando wanted Cordero. That was their choice. But there was also a feeling Kathy Carter is MOS. Kathy Carter is Don Garber. Kathy Carter is Sunil. They control everything. So she's going to win. Do we walk the plank and cast a vote based on what we want to end up losing? But then you don't have a poll, right? There's no polling going on. The first empirical data you have is that first ballot. First ballot pops up. People are like, whoa, Carlos is ahead. They haven't twisted enough arms. They don't control this thing as much as we think. And it just fell in line then, because then people thought, okay, what can they – they're not going to be able to twist my arm if they didn't twist these people's arms. And, by the third ballot, Cordero had 70% or whatever he ended up with. I mean, it was something where I could sense the pulse of the delegates, and I've thought this for weeks, actually talking to a lot of them. And I want to thank everybody I got to know during this process, who are delegates from across the country. I believe that there was a sentiment, and this is why I reported what I did 2 weeks ago, that Cordero was the guy that the majority of people on the grassroots level trusted. But there was also a feeling you can't openly defy Sunil, because what's happened is Cordero has defied Sunil. Sunil is very angry about it. Everybody knew that there had been a personal falling out between them, and that Don Garber now has personally attacked Cordero in his comments to Grant Wall in that interview 2 weeks ago. We can't be seen as being defiant of Garber and Gulati. Then you have a first bout which Cordero leads. At that point, it was over, because then people feel comfortable thinking, okay, he's gonna be the boss now. We can support him openly because he's gonna be the president. Psychology, voter psychology is so important in these situations, Daniel.
You know, though, let me just say this though. I mean, a lot of questions, of course, about the athlete council. A lot of comments being thrown around, especially from Hope Solo, accusing them of just not doing the right thing in her mind. And Stu Holden, of course, with Fox Sports, and who's down there as a part of the Athletes Council, the head of the Athletes Council, he was very, very upset about her comments, and he felt he felt offended by those comments. What did you think from the Athletes Council? Did you think they did the right thing when they were voting for this, for Cordero? Do you think that there were nerves jangling around, in your opinion, or they just want the safe bet?
That's a great question. So what I would say is, last night, I mean, I sat with Rocco Camiso for a while, in these sorts of events, Daniel, it's very difficult to sit and produce, like, long-form articles. So I took Camiso's quotes and threw them out on Twitter. Which I think everybody saw, because I know it would have been nice to have had a long article. Maybe we could go back and do that now. But what Rocco was trying to push and make us understand is that he felt like there was a lot of arm twisting going on in the Athletes Council. Now, the Athletes Council block came in this weekend, split three ways: Carter, Cordero, Martino. And, my understanding was more women's players than men's players who were backing Martino. The men were pretty much split between Carter and Cordero. What happened was the inability of Eric and Kyle to get together. And I think I'm bringing some news.
Mm-hmm.
I hope people are listening.
Sure.
Before Jeff Carlisle or Grant Wall write the same thing, because I'm sure they know the same thing, obviously. The inability of Eric and Kyle to get together caused a lot of those U.S. women's national team players to question their support for Martino and to fall in line behind Cordero, not Carter, even though she's a woman, because most importantly, Cordero had talked about Soccer United marketing and the need to examine those contracts. Carter is the head of Soccer United marketing. Hope Solo had won the day in the sense that her attacks on Soccer United marketing and their role in depriving the U.S. women's national team players and the women's game in general of their just deserts they've earned, that she talked about in her speech and she talked about during her campaign, did make an impact on those players. And I think once they realized Martino, the ones that were supporting Martino, which was their preference, once they realized Kyle wasn't going to make a deal with Eric, which meant he wasn't going to win, and Eric wasn't going to win, they had two choices. Go with Carter, because she was a woman, really. Her history is not one of protecting their interests. Or go with Cordero. They went with Cordero, then shifting the block to being like 80% Cordero and 20% Carter. Anyway, so if they voted individually this morning, all but about 20% would have supported Cordero. So it seemed to make sense that they would just then decide to vote as a block and maximize their power. That having been said, Daniel, let's remember how close the margin was on the first ballot. And had, instead of 100% of that 25.8% of the vote overall that the Athletes Council represents, had Cordero only taken 23% and 2.8% had gone to Carter, which I think is probably what would have happened. A few would have still backed Carter. The vast majority were backing Cordero. Carter would have led on the first ballot. even though I'm saying 80% of the athletes were for Cordero, and then they were all forced to vote for Cordero or the block, that small margin made all the difference on the first ballot. It probably would have been 36 Carter, 34 Cordero. And then maybe we'd perceive things differently. Maybe the people I've just talked about who felt like they wanted to support Cordero but were scared. Because you don't defy Don Garber. You don't defy Sunil Gulati. Would have still said, oh, gosh, he's going to win. The fix is in. We better just go along with it. So it was pretty critical. There's no question about it. Because I will point out, I mean, there are people on Twitter. I haven't watched much of Twitter but this morning. But the little I've seen, they're acting as if, whoa, well, that came out of nowhere. Cordero probably didn't have much support, and one or two people swung it to them. No, by this morning, by about 7 or 8 p.m. last night, Cordero had 75 to 80% of the athletes. That 80% turned into 100%, which was really critical.
Yep, absolutely. Apparently, Stephen Goff is also reporting from the Washington Post when, of course, MLS supported Kathy Carter, as expected, but after the second round, when it became clear she wasn't going to win, then they switched to Cordero. So I think it goes to show you where MLS, they realized that they weren't going to, stand in his way of becoming president of U.S. Soccer. I think they realized that they tried their best to support their candidate, and it just didn't work, and off, of course, Carlos Cordero goes.
Oh, that was obvious. I think Goff from getting that story. But if MLS had continued to vote for Carter, she would have had at minimum 14.2% of the vote. And the fact that she had 10.6 meant, yeah, very clearly, they have 14% of the vote. The only candidate that had more than 14% of the vote was Cordero on the final ballot. Obviously, they voted for Cordero. That's simple math.
It's very
true. I credit the Goff for finding that out from MLS, but... I thought that was obvious the minute the vote was cast that they had voted for Cordero on the final ballot, as had probably just about everyone else. I mean, Martino still had 10.6%, so he might have still had a couple of soccer associations, and I think NASL may have switched to Martino from Winalda. I can report this within the NASL. They were supporting Winalda, but they felt like all along Martino might be stronger to win the election, so... They had the option of switching to Kyle at some point. I'm not sure if they did, but obviously they don't have many votes. We've read the letters back and forth between their commissioner, Rishi Sehgal, and Dan Flynn about that, right? So we know that situation. But they might have switched to Martino. I think the other thing you probably can observe from the third ballot is that there was a massive switch of USASA support under John Paul Mata, who was supporting Eric Winalda. And liked Kyle Martino, but I think ultimately his block did not want to see Soccer United marketing control U.S. soccer. So when it became obvious it was going to be Carter or Cordero, I think that block just kind of folded and went with Cordero on the last ballot.
Yeah, that's very true there. Let me ask you this question, because, I don't want to rag on Hope Solo. I thought she did her best to run a very good campaign. I thought, some of the finger-pointing was not, in my opinion, wasn't a smart move to finger-point, even though I think everyone knew right away, who not to go for who to go for, whatever, personal opinions. But let's just say you want to substitute Hope Solo for somebody else. Let's just say for the heck of it that if you wanted someone that you think had a better shot at becoming president of the federation that could do well for both men and women, let's just say for the hell of it, that do you think maybe Julie Foudy would have been a better candidate if she wanted to run? In my opinion, I think she would have been a better candidate. I think she would understand both the issues and the plights for what needs to happen for the men's game as well as what changes need to happen for the women's game if changes need to happen. I mean, I understand about the whole thing that happened, the World Cup in Canada, in 2015, all played on field turf. Not right, not fair. Why do the women have to play on field turf more times than the men do when the men are allowed to play on grass? And I understand that, and I agree with that, because the women deserve to play on the same surface as the men do. But I'd like to think that maybe Julie Foudy is a little bit more, I would say more, I don't know what I would say, to be honest. But I would think that maybe Julie Foudy, if you want to substitute her for Hope Solo, I thought maybe she would be a good choice if she wanted to run, I'm saying.
Yeah, she might have won if she had wanted to run, but she didn't. She ultimately didn't run. The thing I picked up on, and this, again, there's just a lot I picked up in my reporting on the last few days, that in the last week, that I have not put on Twitter or put in articles. And these are just little nuggets. Some of them I hesitated to tweet about, but now that the race is over, we can talk about it. Julie Foudy had been involved in the, as accused by Hope Solo, in the initiation of a call to discuss the benefits of a block vote with the Athletes Council. Now, the thing that came out of that for me from talking to people is that there seems to be a tension between, let's say, the class of 99 and the class of 2015 female players. There seems to be a feeling among the class of 99ers, although I don't think they've all felt this way, a feeling that, you know, there's a loyalty, there's a feeling of camaraderie with the Federation. Among the class of 15ers, and we're talking about two sets of world champions, right? So two completely different sets of world champion players.
Yep.
Only one player, I believe, was on Christine Rampone, was on both teams, right? I believe. Maybe she wasn't on 99. Maybe she was. I think she won both. But I have to actually look that up. I should know that. It's the kind of thing I should know. But anyway, the 2015ers are a much more aggressive bunch. Now, they're not necessarily like Hope Solo, but they are people like Abby Wambach. They are people like Carly Lloyd. They are people like Becky Salvron, who have spoken out about issues related to this federation and don't necessarily think this federation has represented them quite as well as maybe the people, the Mia Hamms and the Julie Foudys and the Christy Lillies, felt they had. So, I saw Heather O'Reilly in the hallway yesterday. She's actually, I was surprised to see her, happy to see her. Great player. She's somewhere, I think, in between those two camps, even though obviously she was an active player in 2015, still an active player. But there is a difference of opinion in the women's game, I think, between that generation and the current generation of players. So I don't think Julie and Hope necessarily come from the same place. I had thought this also about Eric and Kyle, different generations of players. But it turns out they come from the very same place in terms of what they, the men's game being different, in terms of what they want to see from this federation. It just, like I said earlier, I think there was ego and personality issues that prevented them from getting together. But I don't think Foudy would have been a replacement for Solo because the viewpoint is very different. And I think for some of the players, I don't want to name names. I'm not talking about Hope Solo here. I'm talking about active women's players who didn't run for president this time or recently retired women's players who didn't run for president this time. There is a feeling among them that they can't be well represented by most of those, most of the class of 99ers, that they have different issues with a different time, their different perspectives. At the time, 1999, the U.S. was the runaway leader in women's soccer in advocating for equality, promoting the women's game, et cetera, et cetera. In 2015 and now in 2018, that is simply not the case anymore, okay? And any objective person can say that, even though there are people who were allies of the Federation who pushed back on that. So there were players, current women's players and recently retired women's players, who very strongly feel like you need an aggressive person advocating for women's soccer and advocating for some of these changes. Now, Hope Solo encapsulated that. She's the wrong messenger. We all know that. We all know her own personal history makes it difficult for people to separate her message from the person who is the messenger. I would say the same thing about Rocco Camisa, where I sat down with yesterday. People don't like him, so they have a hard time separating him from the message. But I can tell you, most of what Hope Solo said, I agree with, and I think most people, if they're taking their emotion or loyalty to U.S. soccer out of it, would agree with. And I'm not sure a woman Julie Foudy would have advocated those things. So, actually, in a roundabout way to answer your question, no, I don't. I think Julie Foudy would have represented a certain constituency, and she might have won. She might have been – I think she would have been stronger than Kathy Carter if she was going to be the opponent for Cordero. But, no, I don't think she would have spoke – she could have replaced Hope Solo in the race. I mean, the stuff Hope Solo said was very important.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it wasn't important. It was very important, and I don't blame her for saying it at all. I mean, because I agree with – like I said before, I do agree. I do agree with what she's saying. And, you know, there has to be changes that needs to be done here. But at the same time,
sorry to cut you off, but I should say Hope Solo also made some very strong points about the men's game that she didn't make in her speech today, but she's made during the campaign about how we're failing in the men's game. And those were points of view that she was probably articulating more strongly than even the male candidates, maybe Martino and Winalda at times. But, I'm glad she ran. I hate to say it. I know people will hate me for saying that, but I'm glad she ran. She brought up some pretty important issues on both the men's and women's side. Because her view of the men's game is that the men's game has been hijacked by Major League Soccer, and the women's game has been neglected because of Major League Soccer. So both sides need help. That's just a capsule version of it. But that was basically her message.
Yeah. And all I'm saying is that, you know, I mean, I'm glad she made those comments because it had to be said. But sometimes I feel like, and, you know, this is just my personal opinion. You know, like I said before, I don't think this is like you're running for the highest level of office for the country, like, you know, in political sense, even though this is a political moment. But still, though, I kind of felt, in my view, okay, fine. She went after Carter. She went after Cordero. And fine, if you like that, that's fine. That's your opinion. My opinion is I thought that was a negative towards her. I thought she shouldn't have gone there. But once again, you know, she did stay on point. Her message was loud and clear. And, you know, it's that one or two things that I felt that she said when she went to the podium, I felt went against her campaign. And that's the only thing – that's the only issue that I have. Other than that, I don't have an issue with what she says. I thought she was you know, she did it very well. She got her points across, and that's all you can really ask for when you're trying to vote, you know, to try to become, you know, president of U.S. Soccer after everything that just transpired, like, what, 3-4 months ago, something like that, you know. And I don't blame her for feeling like this, but once again, you know, this is the highest, you know, you want to make change for our game. And I think at the same time, Kardik, while obviously we need an evolution. See, here's what I'm agreeing with Eric Winalda on this. We don't need a revolution here, which is true. The revolution was having this sport being recognized all the way across the board from everyone else around the country who either hate this game or, you know, they feel it's a waste of time, the same typical excuses you're always going to hear. That's the issue that I think we're not in anymore. And I'm agreeing with Eric Winalda on this. We need an evolution right now, an evolution of changing the game into where it needs to be. I think we've said this many, many times before. Pro Rel is not the only thing that will make the changes for this game. There has to be more changes, more situations that need to change to make the evolution better so that Pro Rel can succeed with our game right now.
Yeah. Look, I think the first step to fixing anything, from my perspective, and now I'm speaking, I covered this race as objectively as I could, now I'm speaking from a personal standpoint. The most important thing you can do to make any change right now in this game is to reevaluate the relationship between U.S. Soccer Federation and Soccer United Marketing. Kathy Carter wasn't going to do that. She's the president of some, and she was trying to become the president of U.S. Soccer, therefore probably creating an even greater web of intermingling between these two entities. Carlos Cordero, formerly an independent director, the last 2 years part of U.S. Soccer as the vice president, but prior to that on the board as an independent director for 8 years, has questioned the relationship and wants to get to the bottom of the relationship and what he perceives as some conflict of interest. So I there's a lot I don't agree with Cordero on it. And again, if you were to sum up my ideology, you know, you would bring out that document Tom Martino produced, and that's where I am for the most part. And obviously, there's some small disagreements I have with Martino, but by and large, I'm in the same space he was. But that is the most important issue. that issue, until it's resolved, nothing will change in U.S. soccer. Nothing. And I really appreciate that Hope Solo spent a lot of her time in this race trying to educate the public and the delegates about the conflict of interest and the damage that, from my perspective and her perspective, the relationship does to all other parts of the game in this country, the women's game, youth soccer, adult soccer, and other men's professional leagues. She laid it out in her complaint to the USOC, U.S. Olympic Committee. But pro rel is important. Calendar change is important. Calendar change is something I've advocated for years, something I've been consistent on. I want it. The solidarity and solidarity payment issue is critically important. But it's got to happen first that we deal with this contract with Soccer United Marketing and the intermingling of resources between, or the intermingling of relationships with U.S. Soccer and MLS. And most importantly, what I perceive and what many others who are in the know perceive is a subsidy paid by U.S. Soccer, earned on the back of the men's and women's national team, earned on the back of the dues of adult and youth soccer registered players, a siphoning off of those resources to subsidize Major League Soccer versus via Soccer United Marketing. That has to be dealt with first before you deal with any of these other things. I also mentioned, I think Carlos Cordero probably will instinctively want to try and settle the now, I believe, five pieces of litigation pending against U.S. Soccer. We had the Westside Timbers file an antitrust brief a couple weeks ago with the USOC. I was supposed to get together with their lawyer here. I wasn't able to, so I'm not able to give an update on that situation. I thought I was going to have an update on that one. You have NASL, who has two lawsuits pending, right? One against the independent directors, including Carlos Correa, not the independent directors. All the directors of U.S. Soccer, with a few exceptions, independent and directors from Pro Council, et cetera. That was filed this past week, possibly as a campaign effort to help Eric Winalda, their preferred candidate, in Boomerang. Didn't work. But you have that pending. You've got the antitrust lawsuit from the NASL pending. You have the USOC complaint I just referenced from Hope Solo pending. And then you've got a claim at the Court of Arbitration on Sports, a claim with FIFA related to Crossfire Premier, another club who I'm familiar with and have talked to the interests that are representing them through the years out in the Seattle area. Their case regarding the solidarity payment related to the transfer of DeAndre Yedlin from the Sounders to Tottenham in the summer of 2014. So you've got those five pieces of legislation pending. You also have a CAS claim filed by Miami FC and the Kingston Stockade, Dennis Crowley, our friend, a guy I think is one of the best white young people in American soccer, that is going to be heard in April or May, I'm told, in front of the Court of Arbitration on Sports. I think Carlos Cordero, unlike Sunil Gulati, will want to settle these things and reach some sort of a court. Now, is he going to bend to the NASL? Is he going to bend to Hope Solo? Is he going to bend to the Kingston Stockade? No. But is he going to be willing to talk to them, listen to them, hear their concerns, and try and make a resolution in a way that oftentimes Sunil Gulati, whose strings were, especially at the end, being pulled by Don Garber, was Cordero going to try and engage them in a way that Gulati couldn't at the end? Yes, I believe he will. So we might actually see some unity, some coming together in the next few months. Don't necessarily bank on it, but Daniel, I think we might see it. I think he's gonna try and be magnanimous in these first few months here, make some effort to bridge these divides.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens, obviously. But I'll tell you right now, Kardec, I don't feel at the moment that we're gonna see change right off the bat. I just feel like, okay, now we've moved on from the Gulati era to the Carlos Cordero era, and now he has to show and prove what he can do. And I think that's the only way we can maybe have some form of an appeasement if possible. But if not, I think we're going to be back where we started from. And as you said, it's only one term, and we need to give him an opportunity to see what he will do on this one term. And if he does do well, who knows if he'll run a second term. But obviously, we have to give him a chance to see what he can do, because if we're going to run roughshod and just start throwing all these comments all over the place, then, you know, I just don't know what is going to be out there. And, you know, are we still going to be in turmoil after this first term of Carlos Cordero? Because that's the number one thing here. We got to give him a real chance. We have to give him a real shot, because if we don't give him a real shot, we're right back where we started from. We got to let him make the mistakes. And if he makes the mistakes, and they're egregious mistakes, then we can say, well, listen, let's get somebody else in there, because he's not the one to do it.
Yeah, but again, I've said he's not going to run for more than one term, at least as we understand it now. Now, he might get comfortable in the job and decide he wants to. But, look, I think that he's a guy that's more independent than Don Garber, Kathy Carter, or Sunil Gulati. Now, is he going to blow the thing up like Eric Winalda and Kyle Martino promised? And is he going to make the structural changes that Steve Gans and Mike Vinogrand talked about? No. So he's not where those four guys were, but and certainly not where Hope Solo or Paul Caligiuri was either. So he's not where those six, quote, change candidates were. But he's not totally status quo. I think he might be status quo in terms of structure, and governance, the governance structure. But the governing style will be very different than Sunil Gulati. And I don't think you're going to see necessarily the level of arbitrary, unilateral decision-making where the president decides, goes to the board and says, this is what I decided with Dan Flynn and Don Garber, rubber stamp it. I think you're going to see more deliberation, more listening, more a lot. I think you're going to, you know, what you're going to see is a lot more of an opportunity to see difference makers come forward and consensus built that is inclusive. I have to say one thing that really has bothered me the last few days is the simple assumption that everything that people didn't like about Sunil Gulati towards the end was based on Jurgen Klinsmann or NASL or not qualifying for the World Cup. Obviously, that's what the Twitterverse says and believes. There is a lot of angst about Sunil because as he went on in the job, he became more and more comfortable, and he began making decisions. Well, I shouldn't say began, because he always did this, but he made more and more decisions without proper consultation beyond his kitchen cabinet of Dan Flynn, Jay Berhalter, and Don Garber, beyond those four people, the people he trusts the most, the people he's closest with. I think there is a feeling, and there could be some disappointment if Cordero doesn't operate this way, but there is a feeling among the delegates who felt that way about Sunil that Cordero is different. He listens, he deliberates, he includes. Maybe structurally, policy-wise, he's no different than Sunil. I mean, after all, Cordero is a guy tied to Chuck Blazer. He's a guy that's tied to Sunil himself, or was before they fell out late last year. But he's different in his governance style, and I think that's what a lot of people wanted. You know, they didn't want to blow the thing up and put Kyle Martino in, or really kind of change the structure and put Steve Gans in, but they wanted to change the style and the tone and. They're hoping Cordero delivers that.
Yep. We'll have to wait and see what's going to happen there, Kardik. Trying to find this ESPN article that came out yesterday. It's been posted by on Twitter through, it's a Wiki MLS or something like that. I don't know if it's true or not. I don't want to give. Maybe it's been removed. I don't know. But apparently,
I was going to say, now that Eric Winalda's candidacy is over, you might see some of these these sites like that, the one you referenced, disappear. It'll be interesting to see if they're still in business a couple weeks from now.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
We'll see what happens. But no, but I'm just saying, like, you know, apparently there was a executive session of the U.S. Soccer Credentials Committee that met on Thursday to hash out the voting procedures. Apparently, they're saying, like, source added that the lack of transparency could serve as a basis for litigation to have the election results vacated. I don't know if it's true or not, but we got to say it. Would that be any credence?
No, this has to be said, okay, and I'm sorry. I'm going to make a lot of people angry, a lot of people who like me angry. But there is a specific candidate, one candidate of the eight, who feeds this stuff, okay? And it's a guy I like. He didn't win today. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I think that's
okay.
Coming from that. That might be coming from that person.
All right. Okay, that's fine. I mean, he got it from ESPN, so that's why I was checking. I'm trying to check on their section of the ESPN website for the soccer department. So,
As far as litigation is concerned, yeah. Okay. I was addressing that site you mentioned or that handle. Let's talk about the litigation part. I think that there's some concern about the vote weights. Now, because Kathy Carter didn't win, I don't know that it's as valid, because I think the biggest concern was why, when the vast majority of members and interests in U.S. soccer, why when the vast majority of those people represent adult and youth soccer, does MLS-related entities, MLS, NWSL, and entities related to the two, if you include the Athletes Council minus Chris Ahrens, it's made up entirely of players who played in whichever various edition of the Women's League we've had that has been tied to the Federation or in MLS, represent about 45% of the vote. Okay, so I think that there was a basis for the thought of litigation that Kathy Carter won. Kathy Carter won based on the votes of those two entities, the Pro Council and the Athletes Council, and only a handful of other votes that essentially of the important stakeholders in the U.S. soccer, of the 500-some-odd delegates that were voting today, 600 or so delegates, I should say, only about 50 of them were for the winning candidate. Because Cordero won, with the support of youth soccer, with the support in the end of a lot in the adult soccer community, I don't think the litigation is going to take place. I think, yes, I will say that was accurate. I didn't quite understand what you were getting at, but that was accurate. But I think that was directed against the possibility that Carter won, and Carter won exclusively because of the support of the pro leagues and those former players associated with those professional leagues. Once the Athletes Council flipped to Cordero, it became less of an issue, and then once Cordero won, it's not an issue.
All right. Well, I'm just making sure it's a real story. That's all it is. You know how some people like to put out fake stories and everything.
It was legitimately that could have happened. Yes.
Okay.
But I don't.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure.
It could still happen. But my guess is that it won't happen now. There will not be any litigation of the sort.
All right. Good. So they'll agree with the whole verdict. So Cardick, once again. Just to wrap it up today, a very important day in the general meetings over in Orlando, as you are there, and I am back in New York and New Jersey, we have a brand new president of U.S. Soccer, and let's hope that Carlos Cordero does the things he promises to do and makes these changes to the game that has to happen. Don't know if it happened quickly, but hopefully he'll put it in the right direction. That's all we can hope for.
Yep, I agree, let's keep our fingers crossed and work with Mr. Cordero in the next few months to see what kind of leader he'll be, give him the assistance he needs, but continue to be vigilant about the issues that Hope Solo, Kyle Martino, Eric Rinalda, and others have raised in this campaign.
Exactly. All right, Cardick, I'll talk to you next time, and take care and get some sleep, okay? You need some rest.
Yeah, I definitely do. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you very much. That's Carter Kirshner from World Soccer Talk, as we finally have our new president of U.S. Soccer Federation in Carlos Cordero. I want to say thank you to those candidates like Hope Solo, Kathy Carter, Eric Winalda, Kyle Martino, Winograd, Steve Gans, and Paul Caligiuri for making those attempts to try and take the top spot running the game in this country. Obviously, there needs to be more done, but all you can say is that they've done the best job campaigning up to this point, and hopefully Carlos Cordero can lead us to the promised land. Well, thank you everyone for listening to this special edition of the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer Show. Join me this coming Monday night, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, as we start to preview the 2018 MLS season as we start off in the Western Conference. For Carter Krishnire, I'm Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you for listening today. As always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good afternoon, everyone. Take care and bye-bye for now.